You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast and a brand new episode for you listeners. And this show is all about the American Horse Council because we wanted to share a little bit more about what this incredible organisation does. And with us to talk about it in a little bit more detail is a lady who knows it very, very well. It is President Julie Broadway. Julie, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Nicole. I really appreciate it. And a big shout out to all of our eventers out there. We're very proud to have USEA as part of our show and competition committee. And the United States Equestrian Federation also has a seat on our board of trustees and on several of our committees. So you guys are well represented in our organization.
That is what we like to hear. But it's something that I think is so, so important because what you guys do has such an impact on the eventing community and the equestrian community as a whole. So for anybody that isn't familiar with the American Horse Council, just give us a bit of background on what it is that you guys do.
Okay, let me start off by saying the American Horse Council is a bipartisan advocacy organization. We're based in Washington, D.C. We cover a couple of main areas. We cover federal legislative issues. We cover regulatory issues. And we focus on a lot of coalitions and education. And we do a number of industry initiatives. We operate by consensus, meaning that if the industry has consensus on something, then we're that voice for the industry. If we don't have consensus, we don't want to create more divisiveness. So we remain neutral and we just speak to both sides of the issue and try to educate congressional members about why our industry is split on a particular topic. So that's really our role in DC is to be the voice of the industry and to educate congressional members to help them understand more about our industry and its impact.
I just find it so fascinating because your involvement and the impact that you guys have in your voice has such a wide range of topics, whether it be from disease control, regulation, transportation, just from the economic standpoint, which we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail later on in the show as well. It is just extraordinary because it's all of those things that actually we take for granted that, you know, this is what comes out and this is what we're told we can and can't do, et cetera. But actually, you're the voice that gives the equestrian industry a voice in those key moments and at that really, really key level at Washington. Let's talk about some of those topics because there is such a broad spectrum of them. And I think for anybody listening to this show, most likely, you know, interest in eventing and that kind of thing. So what kind of thing do you see on a day-to-day basis that would directly impact a lot of the people listening to this show?
So because we represent the entire industry, you are right in that the issues that we deal with are very diverse. So I'll hit a couple of topics and you can ask me some questions as we go along if you want to. So, of course, we've been all pent up during this pandemic and people were really nervous as we went into it and anxious about what the implications were going to be on the industry. So for 20 and 21, we really focused our efforts on working on economic relief for our industry in the form of payroll protection plans and making sure that our industry was eligible for those or small business loans or other kind of recovery efforts. Often people don't realize that most equine associations are 501c6s, not C3s. C3s were eligible for PPP, but C6s were not. So we did a lot of lobbying to get C6s included, and we did a lot of work to get additional funding for opening venues. We partner with a lot of coalitions on that. So for example, you don't think about it, but minor league baseball stadiums were closed and a lot of other sporting venues were closed, just like our racetracks were closed or some of our shows were closed. So we had to go up in the halls of Congress and talk to them about why we needed relief to help supplement our industry so we continue to be okay as we rode through this whole thing. So that was a lot of what we did in the last 2 years because that's what was on everybody's mind. But generally speaking, we monitor anywhere from 100 to 150 pieces of legislation at any given time. We really focus on things like estate taxes because so many in our industry inherit the family business. So estate taxes are a big deal for them, or horse depreciation is a big deal. We work a lot on labor policy and visas because we rely a lot on foreign workers in our space. And for your folks, we work a lot on land use issues, whether that be that trails and access to trails or those kinds of things. Or we partner with the Equine Land Conservation Resource Center. If you know Holly Groshick over there, we really work a lot on how we ensure that we have access to lands. What are some various ways that we can preserve and protect lands so you guys have somewhere to go out and ride and do those kinds of things? We are very involved with Veterans Affairs on equine-assisted services for veterans. Often you guys probably know veterans who have suffered from PTSD or have had other kinds of challenges. Really find equine-assisted therapy and services to be a great restorative process. So we really work hard with them to make sure they have access to that. We also work on things like the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. That doesn't affect your guys so much, but for the third-rate folks, that's a big transition that they're going through. So we've had to help them sort of navigate some of the things that go along with that. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the stuff we do that has to do with the Horse Protection Act and our work with the Department of Agriculture, or the Prevent All Soaring Tactics Act, or the PAST Act, which is intended to help ban soaring of horses. That's a really cruel practice that's been around for a number of years, and we've been trying to get some legislation passed to see if we can get that to stop. So lots and lots of, you can see, Nicole, lots and lots of issues for every sector of the industry.
It is, and it's so interesting because there is such a wide variety, but ultimately the one thing in common is the equine industry, the horse world, and the horse, and that is something that affects everybody, whether it be directly or indirectly, that has an interest in the equestrian world. Just going back to the sort of the last couple of years as such, because that actually is, I think, a really, really key example of having a voice at a time that really, really matters. You know, the world changed massively, and the impact that it had on the equestrian world has been huge globally. And as you say, just something as small in terms of how a business is classified could actually determine whether they would survive this absolutely sort of freak thing that came about that nobody really saw coming. And all of a sudden, they're having to deal with things way out of their control. And actually having a voice in the places that really make those decisions will have saved so many people's jobs and made such a difference.
Well, we have, if you add it all up, in our last economic impact study, we have over 1 million jobs in the equestrian industry in the United States. And again, that includes direct jobs or indirect jobs. People don't stop to think about, if you put on an event, you are likely going to have all kinds of additional resources necessary, even if it's in the hospitality space or the restaurants. You just think of all the other jobs that just surround the immediate people that are involved in the space.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the impact that it has had, I bet it gives a real sense of satisfaction in seeing something so tangible, whether it be a piece of legislation or whether it be the changes that came into force over the last couple of years, to know that that has really made a difference in people's lives.
It does. And I will also say, when we went through the recession, you know, back a couple of years ago, our industry struggled. It was really hard on people. So going into the pandemic, we were anxious. We really didn't know what the implications were going to be. But I'm so excited to say that there's been a silver lining, because what ended up happening was people discovered that horseback riding is obviously already easy to safely distance yourself from others, you know, so you've got that whole aspect of it. And as people migrated to rural areas, we saw horse adoptions go up and we saw people have more free time. So lesson programs have waiting lists. And it's been really interesting to see how some of the things we were anxious about turned out to work almost in our favor coming out of the pandemic.
That is so good to hear. And it's good to actually be able to put a figure on it and some context behind it as well, because it's very easy to kind of get caught up in what you think is the case. But actually to have some hard facts around and what has happened is unbelievably beneficial. Let me ask you about sort of more of the other legislative and cases that you work with and things like that. And I guess from the first point of something else that is pretty topical, because from a disease control perspective, have you had much to do with the sort of the EHV1 outbreak and the legislation and the kind of reaction to that as well?
Okay, so the first things that I talked about were legislative things. Now we're getting into the regulatory side of our business, because we do a lot of work. It doesn't matter if it's with the Department of Agriculture or Department of Interior or Environmental Protection Agency. We spend a lot of time in those agencies working with them to ensure that the regulations that they have don't have a negative effect on our industry or our smooth processes. And that's where for a disease outbreak, we have partnered with the American Association of Equine Practitioners, and we have the Equine Disease Communication Center. If your listeners aren't familiar with that, go to the website and download the app, because what happens is state veterinarians report disease outbreaks to the Equine Disease Communication Center. And if you're enrolled in their app, then you will get alerts that tell you where those diseases are and help to track what's going on. Even before you go to any kind of competition, you can go out there and see if there are diseases in that state or in that area. So you can make an informed decision about whether or not you want to go or you want to travel through an area. Even if you want to lay over somewhere, you know, it really helps to know what's going on in those areas.
And what about the economic study that you mentioned a little bit earlier on? Because as you say, there's a million jobs in the equine industry, either directly or indirectly in the US. That is absolutely enormous industry. So tell us a bit about that, because it's something that you're really passionate about in terms of making sure that the industry is massively important, but that importance is felt by the powers that be in Congress.
Well, your listeners probably know nothing speaks louder than statistics when you talk to people in the legislative houses. It doesn't matter if you're at the local, the state, or the federal level. If you walk in and you say, our industry contributes $122 billion a year to the economy, and we have 1.7 million total jobs, and we express what it all encompasses, they're just in shock. You know, they're just like, wow, we had no idea that the industry was so large. And we had a great statistic in our last study that told us that 30.5% of all U.S. households, or 38 million households in the United States, contain a horse enthusiast.
And that's amazing. That's more than three, almost.
Yes, it's a huge number. And when you talk to congressional members, they say, oh, let me convert that and see how many constituents or how many voters I have in my state that are horse enthusiasts, because that's what grabs their attention. And they say, okay, I really need to listen to what you've got to say. And it really positions us well. So yes, you're right. I'm passionate about this study. Try to do it every 5 years. So we were scheduled to do it this year, 2022, but because of the pandemic, we put it off and we're doing it again in 2023.
Just going back to that, $122 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That is just enormous. Absolutely huge. And you are completely right, because actually it's the numbers that grab the attention. And if you can put that into context, that makes such a difference. So you do the study every 5 years and it'll now run next year. So how do people get involved in that study? Is that something that goes out to all of your members, or how does that work?
What we do is we work with a consultant who creates a survey. We then send that survey link to all of the American Horse Council's member organizations and any of our small business or individual members. And then we ask them to pass that on to their members. So Rob Burke over at USEA will get our survey and then he'll send it off to them.
So listeners, if you're listening to this, and you see that survey that comes through from the USEA, this is absolutely why you should be completing it and sending it back. Because actually, if everybody does it, it helps create the bigger picture, provides very, very valuable information for you guys to be able to do that. And I was going to say, obviously, you work really closely with the USEA and the USEF. In terms of other equine organizations, sort of showing, dressage, jumping, do they all have their own representatives with you guys as well?
They do. Of course, most of the breed and discipline associations have a membership with us. But as I said, we also have small business members. So whether they're an equine attorney or an equine accountant or stables or racetracks or veterinarians or farriers. And then it sort of goes from there down to individual horse owners who just want to keep up with what's going on and what might impact them.
That's amazing. So what about the other programs that you run as well? Because you touched upon one for veterans a little bit earlier on in the conversation, but there's a real variety, isn't there, in sort of helping to share this incredible industry that we have with other people.
So we also host or sponsor a number of industry initiatives because we are that neutral third party. People often come to us and say, this is something that would be for the good of the industry. Will you guys host it or sponsor it? So we host the United Horse Coalition, and that is our resource for horse owners who are finding themselves in difficult circumstances and no longer are able to care for their horse. So their horses need some support. So you can go out to the United Horse Coalition website if you need assistance. And you can actually use the searchable database to find hay banks or feed coupons or gelding clinics or vet assistance or all kinds of services that are there. And our intention is to allow horse owners to be able to keep their horse longer or ultimately keep their horse period by being able to access these resources. But if that's not enough, then we have a network of rescues and sanctuaries that we work very closely with. And we can advise you as to what you need to do to prepare yourself to relinquish your horse or find it a new home or whatever needs to be done to rehome it. So that's one of our programs. We also have a huge research project we've done for the last few years that's collecting data from rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Now, we've always sort of anecdotally had a number in our head of how many horses are in rescues and sanctuaries, but we didn't have a hard fact. And as you can tell, I'm all about the numbers. So this process is intended to go to all 1,200 rescues and sanctuaries across the U.S., and they tell us how much capacity they have, how those horses are relinquished to them, and how long the horse stays with them, and how many horses they have at any given time. So we can determine how many horses we can house if we needed to. Are they mostly coming from owner relinquishment or from an animal control confiscation? Or what are the circumstances that get these horses where they are? And so that's been a great study, and it's been really helpful in helping us design programs to help horses that get themselves into rescues and sanctuaries and need to be retrained or something needs to be done to get them to their next career. That's what we're trying to do. We also are very involved with a diversity, equality, and inclusion task force. We really want to see our space embrace underrepresented communities more. And that's been a real fun project to do because we're uncovering these wonderful little pockets of inner city horse communities like Detroit Horsepower or like Mulatto Meadows in around there or Compton Cowboys or Cowgirls of Color, which is here in DC. These are all great programs that are offered to inner city kids to teach them about horses and get them riding. And it's been really fun to kind of work with a number of those groups. In addition to that, one of the big ones we worked on this past year because the pandemic really created an interest in people wanting to get out and ride on the trails. We were seeing a lot more people going to the Forest Service or the Park Service, and they wanted to haul horses out there and they wanted to camp and then they wanted to ride. But what we were discovering was everybody wanted to camp during the pandemic. So we were having a shortage of horse-designated campsites. So we've been working really hard with the Forest Service and the Park Service to say, okay, you have designated sites that are just for people who have livestock, and you shouldn't let people who don't have livestock use those camps because, quite honestly, mixing people who aren't accustomed to being around horses with people who have horses is not necessarily the safest thing to do. So that's been a big project that we've been following up on.
The diversity of it is just absolutely incredible, because the amount of sort of roles that you can take on within the industry is huge. And the voice that you have obviously is extremely powerful. What could people do? What can people do? What should they do throughout the equine industry, throughout the eventing community, do to help you guys do your jobs and to help you have your say?
Well, the first thing I would like to say is I would love for them to sort of get engaged with what we do. They can sign up for free to be a member of what we call the Congressional Cavalry. You don't have to pay anything. It's all free. And what's going to happen is when we have a piece of legislation that we need your voice to be heard on, it's going to send you an alert, and it's going to give you instructions as to what you need to do to contact your congressional member to tell them your opinion on this piece of legislation. And we'll guide you through that process. So that's the first thing you can do. Sign up for Congressional Cavalry. Stay attuned to what's going on in your state or at the national level, and just be a good advocate and get out there and make sure that we're well represented. But I would also encourage you to look at the resources we have that are available and take advantage of those. We really want horse owners to own responsibly, breed responsibly, have an estate plan. Don't assume that if you unfortunately pass away that your children are going to want to inherit these horses or know what to do with them. So estate planning is really a big deal for us. So there's lots and lots of brochures and flyers and things you can find on our websites that would be really great for any horse owner.
And if you are a USEA member, when you get your survey to talk about the economic impact of the equestrian world and sort of have your say. That's really, really important, because it's one of those things, isn't it, that you might look at it and say, I don't know what this is, or I don't understand, or I haven't got time, I'm busy. But actually, it is so, so important for everybody to get involved and have their say. And hopefully, listeners, by listening to this and hearing Julian and everything that the American Horse Council do, you'll understand exactly why it is so important to have your say. Julia, it has been absolutely fascinating, because it is such an interesting topic. You do so many good things. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, people within the equestrian world might take for granted or not actually understand what's going on, because they don't necessarily hear about it all the time. So I think it's really, really important to kind of share that message. So thank you for coming on and talking to us and telling us about it in a bit more detail.
Well, Nicole, I'm going to close with one final thought, which is a lot of people make the assumption that we are a government-funded program, or that our revenues come from a checkoff program or something like that, like in the cattle or the pork industry. And that's not true for us. We rely on our members' income and sponsorships and some publications we sell and those kinds of things as our revenue stream. So it's really important that people don't take us for granted, because if they do, we will cease to exist.
That is a very, very important message. There you go. And listeners, it just puts it into context, I guess, as well, how important having that voice in the equestrian world is. So much good work going on, and it's been fascinating to hear a bit more about it. Listeners, go and check out the website, look at some of those resources that Julie's talked about as well for a little bit more information. And when that survey comes through, don't forget to fill it in next year. Look, Julie, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
And listeners, thank you as always. We really hope that you found this episode really interesting and informative, and has given you something to think about for the future as well. It is, you can have your say. That is the important thing to take from this. We will be back. We've got lots coming up over the next couple of episodes, so do stay tuned. And of course, all roads leading to Kentucky. So we'll be back with some of the team's favourite memories for Kentucky. But for now, that is all we've got time for. We'll be back very soon with more on the USEA official podcast.
Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.